Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Today we're going to be sharing some downright strange and creepy horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Now, without further ado, let's jump right into these creepy and downright strange horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. Today's episode is sponsored by PDS Debt. Getting in debt is so easy. Getting out, well, the system's set up so we don't. If you're struggling with credit cards, personal loans, collections, or medical bills, you need to check out PDS Debt. PDS Debt provides a service to match you with debt solutions tailored to your financial situation. If you're making payments every month on your debt and your balances aren't going down, PDS has solutions for you. Everyone with $10,000 or more in eligible debt qualifies, and there is no minimum credit score required. Bad and fair credit are accepted. Save more while paying off your debt in a fraction of the time. I, myself, like many others when I was younger, got into a little credit card trouble, not really understanding what I was doing. After all that, I ended up being stuck with payments for years figuring it all out. But if I would have had PDS Debt, I would not have had those problems. So, what are you waiting for? PDS Debt strives to understand your specific scenario and can help provide alternative solutions to becoming debt-free. Stop waiting and start saving. Get a free debt analysis right now at pdsdebt.com/swamped. It only takes like 30 seconds. That's pdsdebt.com/swamped. Again, pdsdebt.com/swamped. The event I'm about to tell you happened in January 2005 at Devon, United Kingdom. Every Wednesday evening, me and my little brother would get the chance to take our three dogs out for a walk. On this particular evening, we decided we would walk somewhere different, since we always did the same route. So after about an hour of walking through different fields and taking different turns, we came to some woods. We should have really turned around by then, since we didn't really know these woods at all, but for whatever reason, we decided to go on. It was about to get dark, but we didn't care. We felt safe having the dogs around, which is probably not so great in hindsight. About 20 minutes of walking through the woods, we became aware that one of the dogs was barking hysterically and acting in a very strange way. Not long after this, the other two began doing the same exact thing. My little brother and I became very frightened, as we had no idea what they were barking at. We had no idea how to calm them down. We didn't even know where they were. We soon noticed what they were barking at. My brother grabbed my arm and pointed out a huge beaming light in the sky. It was honestly like nothing I had ever seen in my entire life up until that point. It was extremely bright, very silent, and was moving at an incredibly slow pace. I knelt down, holding the dogs and my brother very tight. I felt I had to try and protect them with whatever I could, I guess. The fact that I was 18 meant nothing. It took around 10 minutes to fly out of sight, and when it did, I was honestly relieved. Up ahead, we could see the end of the woods. We walked very fast because by now it was very, very dark, which made the whole experience that more terrifying. Little did I know, it was about to get a whole lot worse. Once the dogs got to the opening of the woods, they started barking again. Since they were there before us, it took us a minute to see what they were barking at. Instantly, once the barking started, my brother clung on to me. We slowly approached the opening, to which there was a huge field. But there it was. The enormous object we had all seen overhead was at the very bottom of the vast field. We crouched down and just stared. We didn't dare speak. At this time, there were no lights, just a cold-looking object. It was pretty far away from us, so we didn't feel that threatened by it. But then all of a sudden, I noticed something was coming out of the craft. One by one, there were roughly 8 to maybe 10 beings. We were too far to see their faces, but they were quite clearly prodding the grasp of something. The dogs went silent, which was weird. They just sat watching what was going on. They seemed as intrigued as we were. I seriously could not believe what I was looking at. We sat watching them for roughly 10 minutes. That was, until my brother persuaded me that we should start walking back. He was right, but although I was petrified, I just could not stop watching these beings. I kept thinking that I will probably never see anything like this in my entire life ever again. And I guess I was right, because I haven't. We eventually made it home. I could not even speak because I was so shocked. Our mom and dad surprisingly believed us, but not many other people did. I don't care because they didn't see what we did, and I'm grateful for it. Although I won't ever be going to that area again, I just know I will never forget this. It was the new millennium, and I had just graduated from college in a small town where I lived my entire life. My dad was a gentle giant who instilled a sense of duty in me. So, I decided to follow in his footsteps and become a police officer. As a rookie, I quickly adapted to my new job and loved every minute of it. It taught me a lot of great things, as well as not to take every call seriously. However, on this particular day, I had an encounter that changed my perspective of the universe and our place within it. It was around 2 a.m. when I had just received a call from dispatch, notifying me of an elderly female who was in a serious distress. She claimed to be all alone, and that aliens were outside her window trying to get in. I was the closest in the area, so I quickly took the call and turned on my lights. The roads were pretty dark and empty, so I didn't have to use my siren. The way the dispatcher described this call was quite amusing to me, and I couldn't help but chuckle at how absurd it would be for aliens to actually be breaking into someone's home. Previously, though, I had a few calls similar to this one, and it was usually just a prank or a distraught individual who was having certain issues. So, this night, I simply assumed it was just such a call and prepared not to be surprised. I arrived at the residence sometime after 2 a.m. and slowly made my way onto the dark gravel road that led onto the house. It was a huge property, but I could make out faint lights in the distance. I reached a fence that blocked my way, so I got out and continued on foot. As I approached closer, I suddenly started feeling this unusually warm sensation. I also began to smell this very metallic burning odor, which seemed to grow more intense as I suddenly started feeling kind of nauseous. As I approached the house, I was within probably about 100 feet when I suddenly froze in my tracks. A huge, glowing object about 30 feet wide and shaped like a hockey puck suddenly appeared in front of the house and silently floated about a foot off the ground. The smell at this point became so strong that I could taste it burning in my throat. I immediately attempted to let dispatch know what I was seeing. My radio was going crazy with loud pulsing static, so I quickly tried to flank to the house from the other side. Suddenly, out of nowhere, I found myself in my patrol car, staring blankly at the gate in front of me. I looked around, wondering how the hell I got there, as I was just at the rear of the house a second ago. My head throbbed, and I felt extremely nauseous. I stumbled out of my patrol car in a daze and looked around for any signs of the strange object. It was as if it disappeared into thin air. My dispatcher called out for me on the radio, which immediately jolted me back into reality. She asked why I wasn't responding to her calls for 40 minutes now, which confused and startled me. I told her that I just spoke with her a minute ago, but she insisted that we didn't speak for almost an hour. I couldn't remember anything that happened after I reached the back of the house. But the old woman who lived there claimed she saw me from her bedroom window, falling to the ground and being approached by these short alien beings. She also claimed to have been abducted by them many times before, where she was taken to a bright room with rounded surfaces and scanned multiple times by what I can only assume is a machine. For weeks after that incident, I had to deal with these repercussions of telling my story, and quickly realized not to involve it in my friendships and professional life. I had a few dreams about the whole encounter, though, which include scenes of me lying on a table inside a bright room with smooth surfaces, surrounded by aliens with large black eyes. Till this day, I'm still not sure what happened that night, or if whatever I experienced was even real. All I know for a fact is that I am missing about 40 minutes of time that I cannot account for.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
I made a stop to an overlook on the Blue Ridge Parkway. According to the old wooden sign, the elevation was 3,584 feet above sea level. The fall colors were so bright and overwhelming. This was the perfect weekend to be on the parkway. It was definitely the prime time for seeing the fall colors and their perfect beauty. In another couple of weeks, the leaves would start falling off. Lots of folks are terrible at timing their trips to be here in the prime time, but I am evidently pretty darn good at it. I just realized how big I was smiling. I was so happy to be off for the weekend and by myself to get a much-needed break from my mundane accounting job. That big smile I was wearing just dissolved pretty quickly with my remembrance of my dead-end, unfulfilling job. I took one last look and hopped in my car and checked on my GPS the distance to my cabin rental for the weekend. It was just a few more miles down the road. The road was almost pitch black and it felt like I was driving through a tunnel that was on fire. I was happy that my rental would be at a high elevation. The GPS is showing 1 mile to go and the car was still climbing upward. From the directions I was given by the cabin owners, the Swansons, I would be looking for a narrow dirt road on my right. The name was simply Victoria Lane. It was a rather distinguished name for such a narrow dirt road at the top of the mountain. I turn in and make my way up the narrow, rocky, and winding road. The trees' branches were hanging down as if they were trying to grab the roof of the car and stop me from going any further. As I looked in the rearview mirror, I saw a dust cloud following me. One thing I did not see were houses. Just trees and some rocks. Then, the road started to get steep. Very steep. It started to freak me out, to be quite honest. I was driving a Mini Cooper, and it took everything the poor little car had to keep going. How in the hell do people get up this road in the rain or snow? Thank God the road was starting to level out a couple of minutes later, and didn't sound like my engine was about to have a heart attack anymore. I drove a couple of minutes more, and I see a two-story log cabin on the left. This was the Swanson's home, and where I would be getting the keys to the rental. This house was gorgeous. It looked like something that would be on the cover of a mountain scenery calendar. These folks had to be loaded. I pulled into the driveway and got out of the car. The car looked to be relieved that it was finally going to be able to rest. I jokingly patted the little car on the hood. Yep. These people were loaded. There was a newer model Range Rover in the garage and a sleek Tesla parked right alongside it. I was not sure what these folks did for a living, but business was evidently very good. I was met at the front door, before I even knocked, by a middle-aged woman with blonde hair and a very petite figure. She gave a smile. It certainly appeared to be forced, but I didn't really care. I'm not here to make friends, just here to get my cabin key. Mr. Smith, I presume, the woman said solemnly. Yes, you have a beautiful home. Thank you for renting out your cabin to me, I said. The house is too large and is more trouble than it's worth, she said in a very sorrowful voice. I thought it was a rather weird statement, but I shrugged it off. Well, I am certainly impressed with it, I said quickly. Here are your keys. The cabin is up the road. Enjoy your stay, she said, and shut the door quickly. I turned around and mumbled, good talk. As I got back in my car, I drove down the cement driveway back to Victoria Lane. The road curved around the back of the house, which was just as immaculate as the front. There was a very impressive pool and pool house out back. The pool house would put a lot of people's real houses to shame. The road started to get steep again. I shifted the car into low, and the Mini huffed and puffed for a little while longer. Then I came upon a clearing and saw the cabin up on the left. This cabin was even more beautiful than the pictures online. It was basically a smaller version of the owner's home. I saw a man in the yard trimming the hedges. He looked to be middle-aged as well, so I was assuming he was Mr. Swanson. He didn't seem to notice me driving up, or either he just didn't give a damn. Hey there, one hell of a place you have out here. Gorgeous, I said to the man with his back turned. He didn't respond at all. I got my suitcase and walked up the wood steps to the porch. I unlocked the door and placed my suitcase inside. I turned around to offer a second attempt at conversation with the man. I heard a motor starting, and he was driving off on one of those John Deere Gators, without even looking my way whatsoever. Jeez, whatever happened to good old Southern hospitality? I shrugged and went into the house and looked around. It was spotless and looked like a Pottery Barn catalog. They definitely spared no expense on the furniture and decorations. The cabin had a very pleasant woody aroma and a nice potpourri smell, but not too strong. Just right. I went into the bedroom and just fell face first onto the incredibly comfortable king-size bed. I was worn out from the long ride, and I decided to take a short nap. I had almost drifted off to sleep when I heard a knock on the door. I was certainly startled, as I was almost asleep and the fact that I shouldn't be having visitors. I didn't think the very sociable owners would have dropped by for tea. I got up and slowly went to the front door. There was no one there. Maybe I was in a dream state and just thought I heard a knock. I then heard a squeaking sound to my left. I went outside the front door, onto the rustic wraparound porch, and began to walk left. The wood made creaking noises as I slowly walked down the porch. As I rounded the corner of the house, I saw a little girl in a tire swing attached to an enormous oak tree that had to have been a couple of hundred years old. She had long brown hair, and she was also wearing a yellow dress. She was staring at me and giving me a big smile like she knew me well. Hello? I said in a perplexed tone. Hi there. My mommy and daddy own the cabin, and we live just down the way, she said. Okay, great. This cabin is terrific. What's your name? I asked. Victoria, she replied. Oh, cool, so your parents named the road after you. Can't say I have my own road, I said with a grin. Yeah, it's pretty great. I never forget my address, she said with a giggle. The little girl appeared to be 8 or 9 years old. I didn't ask because I thought it might sound a little too creepy. Do your mom and dad know you're up here? I asked. Yeah, I spend a lot of time outside and I love the swing. There's a path right there that goes directly to my house. You should check it out sometime. My dad even built me a treehouse down that way. I squinted and strained to see since the sun was shining. Yep, I think I see the path over there. Sure, I'll check it out before I leave. I always wanted a treehouse when I was little. I never got one though. Definitely one of the drawbacks of growing up in the city, I said. It was nice to meet you, Victoria. I'm going to head in for a nap. I am rather pooped from the long drive here, I said. Yes, sir. Nice meeting you, too. She waved and continued to swing as I turned my way into the house. I headed back into the bedroom, still hearing the squeaking from the swing outside. I opened up the bedroom window to let in some fresh mountain air. I lay back down and drifted to sleep. A knock at the door jolted me awake. It was dark outside and I glanced at the red numbers on the old clock that read 9:30. Then there was another knock. "Coming," I yelled. I slowly dragged myself out of bed and headed to the front door. I glanced through the curtain and saw that it was Victoria smiling at me, holding a basket. "Hey, Victoria. Kinda late. What's up? Do your mom and dad know you're up here?" I thought it was rather odd for her not to be in bed at this time of night. "Yes, sir, they know. They sent me up here to give you this," she said excitedly. She handed me a wooden basket that contained a linen cloth wrapped around something. The cloth was warm and had a nice aroma coming from whatever it was wrapped around. I slowly unwrapped the mystery object. It was chocolate chip cookies. "Wow, cookies. Hot too," I said. "Yep, I helped mommy bake them myself. We always bake a batch for new guests. I'm sorry we didn't get it up here sooner. Well, good night. It is my bedtime and mommy told me to hurry back." She smiled and took off rather quickly. "Thank you, and please tell your mom thank you for me," I yelled as she ran into the darkness. I went back into the cabin with my cookies and plopped down on the sofa. I flipped on the TV and started shoving cookies in my mouth. "Damn, these are good cookies," I mumbled to myself as I ravenously devoured it. Before I knew it, I had eaten all of them in the basket. I saw that the TV had Netflix on it, so I loaded up the app and found Doctor Who, and watched for a couple of hours before I dozed off again. I woke up at about 6 a.m. the next morning and decided to get an early start. I planned to head to Grandfather Mountain and do a little hiking. I got dressed and headed out the door to my car. I sped off down the gravel road. I had to ride the brakes due to the steep grade. I glanced over at the owner's home, and there didn't seem to be any activity. It made sense. It was an early Saturday morning. As I rounded the last turn before getting to the highway, I slammed on the brakes. There was a little girl laying on the ground beside a bicycle. It was Victoria. I jumped out of the car and sprinted to the little girl. She was crying and her jeans were ripped at the knee and she was bleeding. "Victoria, are you okay?" I exclaimed. "Yeah, I think so. I just cut my knee. It's bleeding pretty bad," she said amid her painful sobs. She had quite a gash. Blood was flowing down her leg like lava out of a volcano. "We need to put some pressure on it. Let me get something out of my car to put on it," I said. I was a volunteer firefighter in my community back home, and I had my EMT certification, so I knew a thing or two about first aid. As I was getting up, she stopped me. "We can just use this sweatshirt. It is old and worn out, no biggie," she said. She untied the sleeves of the white Hello Kitty sweatshirt from around her waist and handed it to me. I promptly placed it on her knee and started pressure. She let out a small cry of pain. The cut was bad enough. It was worse than I had thought. The stitches were definitely going to be needed. At least a couple. "We need to get you back to your mom," I said. I looked at her pink bike and looked at her. "Listen, I have a bike rack at the back of my car. I'm going to put your bike on there and then we'll head up to your house. Now put your hand here and keep putting pressure on it until it stops bleeding," I said quickly but calmly, not to make her any more upset. I got up and picked up the little pink bike and walked to the back of my car and latched it on. Afterward, I walked around to get Victoria. She was gone, except for her bloody sweatshirt. I looked around, frantically yelling her name, but nothing. It was like she just vanished into thin air. It didn't take me more than a minute to get her bike attached to my car. She didn't have enough time to go anywhere without me noticing. This was insane. Where is she? I pulled out my cell phone and searched for the Swanton's phone number and called. There were three rings before I heard a woman's voice. "Hi, Mrs. Swanton? This is the renter Terry Smith. As I was driving out today, I found Victoria in the road where she had fallen off her bike. She is fine, she has a cut on her knee, but other than that, she is good. She is putting pressure on it now. However, as I was attaching her bike to my car, she ran off. Is she back at the house by any chance?" I said out of breath. "Victoria!" she yelled. Then there was a pause. Then the line went dead. "This is freaking weird," I said to myself. I decided to call out Victoria's name a few more times, but there was still no answer. I walked over to both sides of the road peering into the woods, but she wasn't there. Why wasn't she answering me? She couldn't be far at all. Why would she just run off? It hit me that she may have left a blood trail. Her leg was gushing pretty good. I am also willing to bet it started flowing faster when she started moving. I looked all over and saw nothing. I got back to the car and headed back to the house and looked out the window for her along the way. I threw the sweatshirt in the back seat and proceeded to do a 3-point turn in the road. As I started back up the road, I heard what sounded like a siren. I stayed put for a moment and looked in my rearview mirror and saw a sheriff's deputy pull into the road behind me. The deputy bolts out of the car with his weapon raised and yells for me to get out of my car with my hands up. He is a very large, muscular guy with sunglasses. However, all I was paying attention to was the handgun pointed straight at me. I was in complete shock. I didn't know what the heck was going on. As I was getting out, the Swanson's Range Rover was speeding towards me from the other direction. "What the heck is going on? Why are you pointing a gun at me?" I yelled. "Shut the F up and get on your knees and put your hands behind your head," the officer yelled. I heard the Range Rover slam on the brakes and slide into the gravel towards me. Then both doors swung open like horses' gates at a Kentucky Derby. The owners jumped out of the car like it was on fire. "Where's my daughter? Where is she?" the woman screamed. Her husband said nothing. He appeared to be too shocked to say anything. He just ran behind his wife. "Jesus, she was just here and then she was gone," I said. "Where's the girl?" said the deputy. "I don't know. She fell off her bike and she was here." I pointed at the bike of my car to show I wasn't completely crazy about what I was saying. "Bill, oh my God, look." She started sobbing uncontrollably when she looked at the bike. "Is that Victoria's bike, ma'am?" the deputy said. "Yes, that's hers. This monster has her," she cried. "Have her? What the heck are you talking about? I don't have her. I stopped to help her, that is all. She can't be far," I said. The deputy went to my car and looked all around. He opened the back door and then he began to talk on his radio. "I need backup now," he said quickly. "Ma'am, is this your daughter's sweatshirt?" he said to the frantic mother as she picked up the Hello Kitty sweatshirt covered in blood from Victoria's lacerated knee. Her eyes were wide. She turned completely pale and fell to her knees. "Yes, that was what she was wearing when she went missing. God, is that blood on it?" she screamed as she turned towards me. She charged at me screaming, "What have you done to my little girl? What have you done?" The deputy pulled her off me, and she just fell to the ground sobbing. The husband fell down beside her. They were distraught, and I couldn't blame them, but I had no idea what was happening. The husband looked like he had just seen a ghost for some reason. "I didn't do anything to Victoria. This is ridiculous." I was sweating profusely and shaking in disbelief. I was on the verge of hyperventilating. The deputy violently handcuffed me and threw me into the back of the police car. My head slammed against the roof of the car. As more policemen arrived, they scoured the area looking for Victoria. All I could do was shake my head and stare at the floor of the car, trying to wake up from this nightmare. A police officer came and opened the door and questioned me about Victoria. I explained everything I knew, the tire swing, the cookies, the bike, and they just looked at me like I was insane. Maybe I was. I just kept telling them over and over I had not done anything with Victoria other than try to help her. She was somewhere in the woods and they could just, you know, ask her when she was found. The officer made a statement that was burned into my brain that will never leave me. "Sir, Victoria has been missing for 6 months," said the officer. "That's impossible. She was here. I saw her yesterday, last night, and this morning. I'm not crazy," I said while holding back tears and vomit. "Be that as it may, sir, you are under arrest for kidnapping a Victoria Swampin, and God only knows whatever else you do once you tell us where she is. And you will tell us," said the deputy. He slammed the door and got into the driver's seat. We pulled out onto the highway headed toward where I assumed police station was. I looked back to see a frantic speckle as the officers searched for Victoria. The parents were still on the ground sobbing in each other's arms. We hadn't been 100 yards down the highway when my blood ran ice cold and my heart sunk all the way to my stomach. I saw a small figure standing in the woods between two pine trees as we rode away. It was her. It was Victoria, with a face of stone, showing no emotion. I began to scream.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
My name is Linda, and I used to be a hippie. Well, I still am a hippie, I suppose. But back in the day, I used to be a real hippie. The kind that packed up their belongings and took a trip on the magic bus out to India at 18. I spent the years after that doing a lot of hitchhiking all over Europe and the Middle East, back when it was relatively safe, if you can believe that. So naturally, I have a lot of affection for hitchhikers and those who are generous enough to give them a ride. And I never failed to stop for those with their thumbs out. This led me to pick up a hitchhiker on a Massachusetts highway one night, which I would later regret very much. So as I said, I was cruising out of Boston one evening. I was heading back towards Salem, probably the hippiest place in all of Massachusetts, and where I currently call home. On the side of the highway, there was this tall man in a long black coat holding out a thumb. I slowed to a stop, called out a friendly greeting from an open window, and then invited him in to ask where he was headed. He told me Maine, but he'd be grateful for as far as I could take him, even if that were only towards Salem. It was then I noticed the bag he had with him. It was one of those leather bowling bags, the semicircular kind with two thin straps. It was not unusual on its own, but the way he held it a little too tightly did attract my attention. But those delicate observations were soon overcome by the outrageous smell that seemed to come off the guy. He reeked of something rotten, and I was quickly glad that I had only promised to take him as far as Salem. I'm not one to judge. I'd met plenty of unwashed travelers back in my heyday. But holy crap, I think he saw the look on my face or the wrinkling of my nose and opted to say something. He told me he was sorry about the smell, that he had been on the road for a few days and didn't have enough money to pay for a motel room or anywhere else to get washed for that matter. I told him not to worry, that I had been in a similar situation myself, and it wasn't anything an open window couldn't remedy. But even with the cracked driver's window, the stench persisted until I'd pretty much resigned myself to mouth breathing for the rest of the short journey. At one point, I got pretty concerned about the man's well-being. Certain infections, such as gangrene, can cause hideous odors as they rot away whatever flesh it has purchased. If he was a drug user, and he had picked up something like that from sharing needles, he had to be in some sort of pain. But when I threw out a vague question, inquiring about his health, he seemed confused. He told me he was in picture-perfect health, how maybe he could do with putting on a few pounds, but other than that, he was peachy keen. I was almost sure I'd seen him limping a little as he climbed into the passenger side, but I still decided not to press the issue. Offending your passenger does not make for a pleasant journey. Anyway, we arrived in Salem, and as much as I tried not to show it, I was over the moon that we were parting ways. But the rotten smell seemed to cling to the car's upholstery, no matter how much Febreze I pumped in there. And I spent most of that evening scrubbing the passenger side with a mix of disinfectant and hand soap. It was the first time I'd ever actually felt regret about picking up a hitchhiker, and it was profoundly confusing for me. I hated feeling like a Grinch who was angry she'd been generous enough to help another human being. But all of those emotions paled in comparison to the following day when I told my partner what had happened the previous evening. I knew something was wrong the moment I mentioned picking up a hitchhiker. My partner gave me this look that I'd only ever seen once or twice throughout our entire relationship. It was one of pure fear. I asked her why she was looking at me like that, what she knew that I didn't. All she did was flick through a newspaper she was reading over breakfast, pointing out a particular article that consisted of no more than one or two paragraphs. It detailed the story of a prisoner escape in New York State, how a tall, boyish prisoner had managed to slip through the cracks thanks to some sort of paroling error. New York State troopers had urged public members to watch out for a tall, thin man who walked with a limp. The article said that the prisoner was most likely headed up to the Canadian border in a bid to escape justice. I had given that prisoner a ride. My partner immediately called the cops, and I called into work telling them I might be a little bit late. A pair of uniformed officers arrived at our home with lightning speed, desperate to write down as many details as I could remember. What he was wearing, what he was carrying, where I had dropped him off, where he was going, if he said anything like that, etc. I could only answer so many of their questions, but I had a few of my own too. I told them about the terrible smell, the stench that clung to my upholstery that was likely still lingering. I wanted to know what could make a man smell that terrible, if he had some sort of disease that he had not mentioned. Honestly, I was terrified that if he did, it would be contagious. After all, I'd spent the better part of an hour in the car with this guy. They told me no, that he wasn't sick, but they could explain the smell, although it might be something that I did not want to know. I told them, of course, I wanted to know what it was. I'd been in the car with a murderer and lived to tell the tale. It was with this horrible look in the officer's eyes that he told me that a rotten smell could be explained away because he had escaped to visit someone in Buffalo, New York before he made it into Massachusetts. Someone he had taken a trophy from. Their bloody, severed head was in that bag he was carrying.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.